And that sounds like my cue. Music is, of course, as ever, evocative. Since the revolution in Cuba, the government's had an ideological commitment to providing free medical care. Now, that's seen the rise of a health system and a country that now has the highest doctor-to-patient ratio in the world. In fact, at the moment, as we'll find out, they have more doctors than they need, an enviable position. Back in 2005, Cuba established a thing called the Henry Reeve Brigade. Now, that includes teams of doctors and nurses ready at a moment's notice to leave the country, to go assist in medical emergencies anywhere around the globe. At the moment, yes, of course, that emergency is the one we all know, COVID-19. And the brigade, it's out there and it's working in about 22 countries, Italy, South Africa among them. Thing that those teams have been doing globally since the 1960s, an extraordinary little history, this policy of medical internationalism. John Kirk can explain. John is a professor in the Department of Spanish and Latin American Studies at Dalhousie University in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Now, he's written a book on the subject called Healthcare Without Borders, Understanding Cuban Medical Internationalism. Now, that's published by University Press of Florida. John, welcome.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Let's begin domestically, shall we, in Cuba. The healthcare system there, how many doctors do they have and why are they so thick on the ground?
Right. When the revolution took power in 1959, there were 6,000 doctors in Cuba. By 61, that had been reduced by half. Half the doctors voted with their feet and left mainly for Florida. So we went from 3,000 doctors in 1961, 62, to the present where there are 95,000 doctors in Cuba. Hmm. By comparison, Australia's got just over 70,000. So Cuba is half the size of Australia, so it has twice as many doctors per capita as Australia. So they have too many. And it is the main source of hard currency for Cuba. Brings in about $6 billion a year. That's about twice what tourism brings in. So it's very important economically, but also it has very profound ideological roots. There's a public free system in Cuba, and life expectancy, infant mortality are very similar to those found in Canada, better than the United States, in fact.
So domestically, the healthcare is good, the population is healthy. You say a source there of income, of foreign monies. How does that work?
The Cuban government has got a fabulous healthcare system for a developing country. As I mentioned, if you look at infant mortality rates under five mortality rates, they're very similar to what you find in some developing countries. So it's the best in the global south. When Cuban doctors go abroad, since the revolution, over 400,000 medical personnel have gone to over 160 countries. You may remember the Ebola in 2014, when mm-hmm. Cuba was the first country to accept the invitation of the WHO. When Cuban doctors go abroad, they basically depends on the country because the COVID crisis, there were almost 29,000 medical personnel from Cuba, doctors, nurses, technicians, who were working in 58 countries. So there were already a lot of people before this. And what happens is there's a sliding scale depending upon the ability of the country to pay. Some countries in sub-Saharan Africa don't pay anything. Other countries, Qatar is a good example. There were 500 medical personnel in Qatar, Cuban personnel, and another 200 have arrived to help with COVID. These doctors get paid a lot of money compared to what they make in Cuba. In Cuba, there's a socialist revolutionary government, and from preschool, kids are socialized to believe that they have to share what they have. The preamble to the Cuban Constitution states that. So it's part of the altruism which is involved. Now, there's also the financial aspect, but there is also the – go ahead.
Well, let's come to that financial aspect. I mean, you say there's sort of a sliding scale of fees internationally depending on the country's capacity to pay. At what extent is that also influenced by the diplomatic point that Cuba is trying to make with those interventions?
I think the people overemphasize the dollar diplomacy aspect. I think that the diplomacy is there, but I think Cuba has provided medical care to many countries with which it didn't even have diplomatic relations. Mm. Closer to where you are, if you look at East Timor, when East Timor became independent, I think there were about 30 doctors in East Timor. Cuba sent 300 medical personnel at no cost. And then they trained just over 1,000 Timorese in Cuba to become doctors. So the Cuba, in terms of diplomacy, Cuba gained very little by investing the training for six-year programs for 1,000 Timorese and sending 300 doctors to Timor. They did so precisely because it's part of the altruism. It's part of the fact that Cubans are socialized from the very beginning to understand that they share what they have. They don't give the leftovers.
Perhaps it says more about the rest of the world that we greet that sort of an approach with an almost instinctive suspicion.
Yes. No, you're exactly right. It's the world's best kept secret. What Cuba has done since 1960, and again, you know, the medical system was bleeding, but in 1960 there was an earthquake in Chile with whom Cuba didn't have diplomatic relations, and Cuba sent its first medical delegation. They've been doing that since 1960. It is quite extraordinary. And it's not well known.
Tell us about this character with a distinctly Cuban name of Henry Reeve and the Henry Reeve Brigade. What's the story there?
Interesting story. 2005 in New Orleans, you may remember, there was Katrina, a horrible disaster, and Cuba offered 1,400 medical personnel trained in emergency medicine and 32 tons of medical supplies. The George W. Bush administration didn't even acknowledge. And if you look at the photographs from the time, the Cuban doctors and nurses were sitting, waiting with their backpacks ready to go at a moment's notice. They were sitting in Havana waiting. The call never came. Just after that, a few months later, there was a massive earthquake in Pakistan. And Fidel Castro, at a medical graduation, said, "We're going to form the Henry Reeve Brigade." Henry Reeve was, ironically, an American. He fought for Cuba's independence between 1868 and 1878. He was captured by the Spanish, was killed. So the Henry Reeve Brigade started in 2005, and the very first mission was to send 1,300 Cuban medical personnel to the Kashmir region of Pakistan, where there had been a massive earthquake.
And they're no strangers to danger, to risk, these Cuban doctors. I mean, some of the places that the brigade has been are extraordinary.
Yeah. Well, I wrote two books on the subject. You mentioned the most recent one, and I interviewed 270 doctors, nurses, technicians over a 12-year period in Cuba. And I also spent time with the Henry Reeve Brigade after a natural disaster in El Salvador, Hurricane Ida. So I saw close up what they do, and the living conditions were appalling, quite dangerous. But they are trained. They are trained in a sort of a preventive medicine, primary health care, and working in rural areas. And there are about 7,000 trained to deal with emergencies. So one of the lessons that we can perhaps learn from the pandemic, which is affecting the entire planet, is to have a team organized by the WHO to use the Cubans with the surplus of emergency medicine expertise ready for natural disasters, whether the hurricanes or monsoons or whatever. These Cubans are battle ready, and they're trained, and they're extremely efficient.
These are people who treated, 25,000 children after Chernobyl? On the front line in Ebola?
Yeah. In Chernobyl, it was after the nuclear implosion in the Ukraine. And this was at a time when the Cuban government was left as an ideological orphan after the implosion of the Soviet Union. So 85% of its trade disappeared. Yet at this very, very difficult time, Cuba started to receive kids who'd been affected by the nuclear implosion. 25,000 were treated for free. So the medical care, accommodation, food, and all of them were allowed to bring a guardian, all free. So the Cubans have done that. They've also, there's a very unknown project called Operation Miracle, cataract surgery, basically, but also dealing with glaucoma. So Cubans have treated at no charge 4 million people, mainly in Latin America and the Caribbean and Africa. 4 million surgeries have been done on people who could not afford it, all free.
You mentioned the knockback after Katrina of Cuban doctors and paramedics waiting, ready to go to assist there. And we've got a similar situation with the US and COVID-19, with the US calling for a boycott of the use of Cuban doctors during the pandemic. That seems reasonably extraordinary.
Yeah, well, the roots of opposition of the United States to Cuba are very well known. Everything from assassination attempts against Fidel Castro to economic embargo, which continues. And the UN last week appealed to the United States to drop its embargo on Iran and Cuba and Venezuela. The United States ignored that. So it is really appalling that in a country which has the world's worst rate in terms of COVID, to have the government trying to stop Cuban doctors going to other countries. Fortunately, the other countries have sort of said, no, we need medical care. You've got your own ideological preferences. Leave us alone to invite in who we want and who we need. The foreign minister of Andorra, the little country, the principality is the term, they took in a bunch of Cubans, and the foreign minister said to Trump, back off. This is our country and we'll do what we want.
So Andorra, but Italy as well, South Africa as well, they're doing work around the world.
Yeah, at the moment there are about 1,500 specialists who are in 22 countries, mainly in the Caribbean, four or five Latin American countries. In Qatar they sent 200, South Africa as well. So and they've received another, I think the last figure I saw was 50 requests for help. So they've also indicated an interest in helping in the United States if the United States wants that help. But again, as we saw with Katrina, I don't think there's any chance the United States would ever accept Cuban assistance.
And what's going on with the pandemic in Cuba itself, the figures there?
The figures there are interesting. Unlike anywhere else, because you've got a very well-qualified civil defense, which is used to dealing with hurricanes, and since you've got so many doctors and nurses, it's been very well contained. One of the first things, and like Australia, Cuba as an island was able to isolate itself. So tourism was stopped. A massive economic blow, but Cuba sort of said health mattered more. So no tourists were allowed in. The tourists who were in to finish their vacation, they were kept under observation in hotels, and then were sent back to their countries, and no more came in. You've got, whenever there's been an outbreak, you've had a quarantine of a region, and it's happened in several of the larger cities in Cuba. Cuba's got a population of 11 million. There are 69 dead so far for a country of 11 million, which compares quite favorably. Nowhere near as good as Australia or New Zealand, but compared to any developing country. And your former guest, and talking about Brazil, I think, sort of put the situation very well. So the Cubans have got a system of watching. They sent 20,000 medical students to go door to door, knocking on every door to find out, in a preemptive strike. And again, Cuba's emphasis on healthcare is on preventive primary healthcare. You don't deal with it in a curative way afterwards. You try and resolve it first. So if you can imagine, 20,000 medical nursing students went door to door to check on everyone, asking if there were anyone who were presenting the symptoms of COVID. Then they reported to the family doctors, who in turn reported to the polyclinics. Usually about 8 or 9 family doctors report to a polyclinic. And so people were observed and kept under watch vigilantly to make sure that, and if they did present the symptoms, then they were sent to one of the hospitals.
John, thank you. You won't get this reference, but you have, for this audience, the byword for authority in the discussion of matters medical, which is the faint Scottish accent. It's a long story, which perhaps I could explain to you another time, but the listeners will know what I mean. Thank you for revealing that world to us.
Now, it's been a pleasure, Jonathan. Again, it's the world's best-kept secret, and it's important that people realize how this tiny little country has done so much for the planet.
A secret no longer. John Kirk, professor in the Department of Spanish and Latin American Studies, Dalhousie University in Halifax, Nova Scotia. If you want to know more, check out the book, Healthcare Without Borders, Understanding Cuban Medical Internationalism, University Press of Florida is the imprint there.